Welcome to the Eastman Dental Podcast, where we hope to inspire, motivate, and provide education from our guests' experience.
It was really interesting there, Julia, to hear a patient's point of view about things, because often we get immune to dentistry because it's something we're doing all day, every day.
Yeah, and I think that he gave us a very good insight on what it feels like to be a patient that perhaps ends up being shared around various different dental professionals.
And he's had a whole host of dental treatment, all sorts going on. And the fact that he's gone from being really dentally anxious to having all of this treatment and, dare I say it, enjoying going to the dentist is a really great story.
Yeah, no, I think it'll be an inspiring story for our listeners.
So sit back, relax, hear our patient story from David.
With your hosts, Josh Hudson and Julia Bruin.
So David, it's a pleasure to have you on the Eastman Dental Podcast. Just to start off, tell us a little bit about you. Yeah, we always like to know what kind of person we're dealing with. So tell us a bit about yourself and tell us a bit about yourself as a patient.
As a patient, great. That's a good qualification. But as a patient, that's good. As a patient, and that may be one of the reasons I'm here today, I tend to get quite nervous still in the chair. Mm-hmm. And when I'm nervous, I talk. Okay. And that's... obviously, if you're a dentist, that can be quite annoying because I tend to keep talking when it's perhaps not always appropriate. But for me, that's the way I deal with a stressful situation. That's, again, maybe why I'm here today, because it's someone I'm able to talk under pressure.
Fair. And it's normally when we've got our hands in your mouth that we're asking you the questions.
This is true. It's nice to have a bit more freedom.
Yeah, no hands in the mouth today.
So what were your sort of childhood experiences as a patient?
Of course, I didn't get off to a very good start. My very early memories of going to the dentist were actually quite unpleasant. I was very, very scared, very uncomfortable, very nervous. And I think there was probably about the sort of second or third visit to the dentist I can remember, I had to have gas for some reason. I can't remember if it was a filling or whatever it might have been, but I had to have the gas. And I can remember the smell of the awful plastic black cup as it came over my face was one thing that will never leave me as a horrible experience. But on the way home, where I think it became quite a stressful experience for both me and my mother, I was quite violently sick in the back of the car, which I didn't deal with very well. I was only about 6 or 7 years old. And I think it was quite traumatic for my mum as well. And that realistically meant a break in my dental visits until probably I was nearly 20 years old. It was something that my parents probably didn't feel was an experience they wanted to put me through again, because I dealt with it so badly. And it wasn't very good for them either. So the easy way out was, if we don't need to do it, then we won't do it. So I had a very sort of like, I used the word traumatic start to my dental path. And it left me with a really bad fear of dentists. I mean, it was a place that I just didn't want to go to. And it was only when I was about 20 years old, I broke a tooth when I was away on holiday, obviously had to get it repaired because I was in a lot of pain. And that, in my early relationship with dentistry, was I went to a dentist when something hurt. And that was the only reason I would go. It wasn't something where I would actively go for any kind of cleaning or hygiene.
Yeah, there's no prevention element of
absolutely
your dental
not. It,
life.
It was something that I would only do at the most extreme circumstances, which was basically being in pain.
And then we'll get onto it, but you've had a lot of treatment since then. And there must have been a point where, in that journey, where you realised, actually, I now need a bit more than maybe a clean or an odd filling. So when did that come about? What was the point where you realised that maybe actually you needed a bit more dental treatment than maybe you'd first initially thought?
Well, again, that didn't happen on that first visit when the pain was relieved when I was 20. The thing that was really good then, I was introduced to a local dentist who was quite new and quite young. Really, really nice guy. He had a lovely team around him. And my relationship with dentistry changed from being a fear to being something I could tolerate, in the respect that I knew I had to go. It was good to go and have things done and checked out. And I did go and have checkups and have cleaning. But it wasn't still something that I would say, I certainly didn't enjoy it. It wasn't something that I'd go, oh, great, I've got a cleaning coming up in 3 months. I'm really looking forward to that. But it had gone from a fear to a tolerance, I think is a nice way of putting it. And for about maybe 20 years, when unfortunately for me, this young dentist retired. And suddenly I found myself in a situation where I think that dentists are a bit like hairdressers in my world. Mm-hmm. There's certain people you don't want to change. You don't want to change your dentist and you don't want to change your hairdresser. And I'd had 20 years of being comfortable in going and having the anything that needed doing. But mm-hmm. again, realistically, on a preventative basis or a reactionary basis rather than a proactive basis. But suddenly I found that the one person I trusted had gone, but that dentist had moved on. And I was sort of stuck. So I needed to find somewhere else to go to in terms of a practice. I was recommended by a really good friend who knew a very good practice in London, where I now go. And that was combined with an issue where I have one of my front teeth is on a post, mm-hmm. And the other tooth beside it failed. So I was in a situation where I needed some work doing on my front teeth, which were obviously a key part of your whole visual appearance for one thing. But in my case, practically, it's for eating. You know, I needed something to bite with. And I needed to trust those people that I turned to have that treatment done. And that's when I think that was the turning point, Josh, I think you're referring to. That's when I went from being a sort of sedentary patient where waiting for something to happen to someone that's like, hang on, I need to do something now before something gets seriously compromised or could cause me a longer term issue. Mm. And that was the point at which I went, I need to now go and see what's the right word I'm looking for? It's the first time I've done this. I need to go to the next level of dentistry, if that's a good way of putting it. Mm-hmm. I needed some specialist dentistry done. Mm-hmm. And I needed to go and see a specialist. I need to find the right people that could put me in front of the right people to get the treatment I needed.
Okay. And so did you sort of fully understand those problems that you had? Or was that explained to you? Or was that something that you, in your own head, had thought, you know, this is involving my front teeth. This is important. This is something I think I do need to see a specialist because perhaps my routine care provider may not be the right person because this is something that's going to be right out there for everybody to see, but also for you to use, like you've described, the functionality of your teeth.
Absolutely. And yes, I mean, it was where I realised that I had something going on now that was actually, you know, could fundamentally change the way that I bite, I chew, the way I look. And I also realised that obviously with the pressure that's put on the front two teeth, it had to be done properly and safely. And I needed to see someone that could give me all the back. Because I just knew I needed something doing. I needed someone to explain to me exactly what the issues were, what the challenges were, what the risks might be if I didn't do anything. And it was just having someone explain to me in a bit more of an informed way, actually, David, this is where you are with your teeth. Here's the options you've got available, and here's what we would recommend that you do. And by the way, here are the people you need to go in to see, depending on which option of action you decide to take.
So do you feel like you fully understood what was happening and what the options were? I think potentially one of the issues is we're talking about this stuff all day, every day. So we become very desensitized to it. So if I'm talking to somebody about a post-crown, for example, mm-hmm. I might have talked to somebody else about it that morning. But for a patient, that's the only time you're going to have that conversation. That's the only time you've probably heard about it is when somebody's talking to you about it. Mm-hmm. So maybe we don't always explain things as well as we should. But do you feel like you got a good understanding of exactly what your problems were? And was there anything in particular that helped you to understand it? Was the explanation good enough? Was it having it written down? How did you end up fully understanding what needed to be done?
I think it was a combination of things. The explanation was fantastic because, as I say, I'm not a dentist. Yeah. I'm a patient. Right? Yeah. And it was, there was obviously something quite serious going on in a respect that it was something that needed to be treated correctly. Otherwise, it could have been leave me in a situation of just having a compromised bite and all sorts of things. And again, I didn't want to walk around with a tooth missing, bluntly. That was a concern to me because there was some concern around the one that is a post-crown, that the post was potentially compromised. So luckily, I was shown some x-rays and shown the post and showing what the issues might be with the actual nerve. Am I used the right word? Nerve. I'm not the dentist, but yeah, okay. Yeah. Thank you. It was a combination of explanation, of X-rays, which were really helpful. Something visual is always good to a patient because we see things, we understand them a lot better. But for me, it was the fact that it was the expression that the obviously with my front two teeth, one is now a veneered crown and one is a post crown, and it was the difference between the two and how we would go about doing them and what the various complications or issues might be with each one because they were different. To me, I ended up with two lovely front new teeth, and my front teeth have never looked my real teeth were never that good. But to understand why the way it was done and was the right way to do it was really good to understand that, because I now feel very comfortable with my front teeth. And in fact, I've got no, I can rely on them. They're very good. I mean, I have no fear in biting stuff, and it's only because it's been explained to me that what I've had done is the right way to have had it treated.
So, did you find challenges to get this care, or was it quite a straightforward process?
I think I was incredibly lucky. In the respect that I did get put through to or connected to a practice where they had a fantastic range of dentists, all with various specialisms, in which obviously those issues of those front two teeth were one of the specialisms. It's a very good, I mean, if you look on the internet, I mean, you can just look up, I don't know, anything, and you can get 200 people that say, I can do that, and that can be in dentistry or any form of life and thing. Mm-hmm. But with dentistry, a bit like, as I say, because it's so personal. And it's, you know, to me, I now realise it's actually quite a serious thing that you need to have good mouth hygiene and good control of how your whole mouth operates. To find someone you can trust, it's all about trust for me in that. And I think in my case, it was a personal recommendation. And that was, if you speak to someone who's either in the dental profession and or has been through something similar, they're the people that you would take references or advice from. Mm. And I was lucky that I had both.
So I'm interested to say, so the key point there was the trust. Mm. And obviously you ended up having the treatment and there was that trust was there. But what was there anything that you can kind of pin down as to what made you trust the people that you ended up getting treated by? Was it the time? Was it the explanation? Was it the mannerism? What was it that made you go, actually, yeah, I trust you and I think I'm going to go with you to have this done?
Yeah, good question. Two things I would say. It's basically the understanding that the dental professionals demonstrated to me was really key. I was immediately aware that I was speaking to someone that knew exactly what they were talking about, were able to explain it in language that a mortal like I could understand. But more importantly, you knew that it was just their way of explaining something quite complicated to someone that may not get all the ins and outs, but more importantly, could make them realise these are the major issues of what's happening here. So it was the demonstration of knowledge was one. The manner of it is everything for me. Mm-hmm. If you're a nervous person, as I am in the chair, it doesn't take much to unnerve me. I guess a lot of people are similar, but you really have to be comfortable with the person that's obviously doing the stuff to you. I've been very lucky that I'm now dealt with by some people that are their bedside manner is fantastic, and that helps a lot because it helps me relax. It helps them do their job better. It's better for both patient and for the dentist. It's a two way benefit, and I think that's the knowledge plus the manner is the thing that sold it to me. That's when I thought these are people that I'm happy to do what I need to have done.
And clearly, you know, we've got you on this podcast because you've had a whole raft of dental experiences and provision by lots of different people. So I'm interested to know how your friends, your family, perhaps your employer perceived your treatment, because obviously when you have this sort of treatment, there is an impact wider than you as the patient for lots of different reasons. So was that significant, or did you just kind of keep your dental stuff to yourself?
Well, because even in the last sort of 2 to 3 years, I've had a fairly extensive amount of stuff done. I've had a couple of implants. I've had a couple of root canals. Previous to that, I've had an apicectomy. I've had a pretty good range of quite what I'm going to refer to as a patient-heavy duty dentistry.
Yeah, for sure.
But But in terms of how other people perceive it, my employer, which is fantastic, it seems to be every time there's a meeting in London, I'm not available because I'm at the dentist. But that's not strictly true, but it's how it appears to them. So there's a bit of a joke about, oh, is Dave at the dentist again? But what's, I think, is strange about me, obviously most people can't actually see what I look like or what my teeth look like. I don't have a Hollywood smile. That's not why I've had the dentistry done. It's not cosmetic dentistry. And I think in some of the practices that I didn't go to, their whole focus was more on cosmetic dentistry than what I'm going to refer to as proper dentistry. Mm-hmm. They thought that the patient was looking for the smile rather than the better quality of dental care. They felt that was the thing that might perhaps get you to go to them rather than somewhere else. Where I've been lucky, and obviously with the teeth that I have, even though I might not look like I've got a fantastic set of teeth, actually I know they are. They're really, really good because I've been well looked after, had some really good advice. And as you say, that's the bit I think that throws people, because I'm in theory at the dentist a lot. They just expect me to look like some kind of, I don't know, racehorse, but no, it's not visible dentistry. That's the thing that I think is interesting. And that's the perception. It's like, what have you had done? Because you can't see it.
Yeah.
Well, don't they say that's always it?
That's the word I was struggling for, Jeff. They
always sort of say that it's a bit like that with cosmetic surgery, isn't it? If you look as though you've had something done, you've had it done perhaps not so well.
Very true.
That's a good point.
And so all those different things that you just mentioned there, was that something that was a big plan from the start, right? There's all of these things that you need, or was there a little bit and then you had a little bit more? How did it actually work in terms of the logistics of all that treatment?
So in the last sort of 3 years since I've been with my current practice, we've actually almost had a plan from day one.
Okay.
I was very fortunate in the fact that the first person I spoke to took a look at what the things that were going on in my mouth. There was the immediate stuff, which was not dramatic. There was nothing that needed to be done today, but there were some things that were identified that actually in the next sort of like 6 to 12 to 18 months, there's some things here that we need to address. Mm-hmm. And they were the kind of things that you couldn't do all in one go. I probably wouldn't have wanted it all done in one go, if I'm perfectly honest with you. But a plan was sort of developed, and it's been a phased plan. And from my point of view, it's been great. It's been very gradual. It seems a lot less stressful doing it in incremental pieces. But it's also allowed various things to heal, like for the implants, for example, given the times for the grafts and stuff to take. And then I've had a couple of extractions. I mean, it's just been a gradual process. And I've literally got my last piece of the process, or the current plan, next week. I've got an implant being done next Tuesday. And that, in theory, is the end of that, or the end of that particular first plan.
Yeah. And was that all written down? Did you have a list of that, the costings of all that? Was that all kind of clear from the outset and this is what we're going to do and you just work through it?
Yeah, what we did, we had like a sequence plan. And we knew the things we needed to do. We knew that the order we'd like to do them in. Mm-hmm. And at each one, we sort of worked out what the gap might need to be between step one and step two, mm-hmm, and step three. There was like an estimated costing for each one. The one thing I can never thank my current practice for enough is the introduction of a sedation company that I now use, because I it's not that it's an unpleasant experience, but it just changes my whole personal approach just to anything being done that's quite serious.
Yeah.
I now am very happy to go and have it done, and it's great. It really, really is. And this is someone we sort of at the start of this conversation, maybe sort of 50 years ago, you wouldn't get me in a dentist end of. I might have been in agony and it wasn't going to happen. Yeah. I've literally gone from one extreme with the patient experience to the other. And it's like, I never thought it would happen to me. I never thought I'd be going in and having the stuff I've been having done in the last couple of years. Not only that, I'm actually quite, not only happy to do it, but I'm quite keen to get it done on the understanding of the benefit that it will give me in the longer term.
That's good to hear.
Yes.
Because not every patient has that perception. But I guess that's a reflection on the clinicians that you've seen who've instilled that in you.
So do you think you were prepared for all of this treatment? I mean, you've just talked about apicectomies, you've talked about root canal, you've talked about implants. These are big treatments that clearly you've had a treatment plan for and costings for. But do you feel as though you were well prepared for these types of treatment?
I think so. I mean, I think it's always been very well explained to me what was going on. It's always been very well explained to me what the recovery time might be for anything that was particularly, I don't know, whether other stitches involved or something like that, and how to be careful afterwards. I mean, the one thing that's been a bit of an eye-opener to me is the fact that how important it is to continue to see a hygienist in and around having implants done. That's been quite a thing that I now realise the significance and importance of that. So during my extraction for my current implant that's coming up next week, between extraction, letting it heal, make sure that it's been hygienically looked after and clean, getting it ready for the implant, and then obviously post-implant, same thing again. It's important to keep on top of all this stuff. And that's a learning for me that, I mean, I would in the past just do it and then I'll forget about it. No, it's not like that. You have to look after this stuff. And that only comes from being informed by the dental team you're working with, that you know what to do. That when you know what your involvement is in the process, it makes it a lot easier for everybody. But also, you can sort of as a patient can buy into it, because it's like, well, I know what I've got to do. I've just got to keep it clean and be careful, and then we'll just continue with the process. It's always been very clear what my piece in the equation is, and that's what matters.
Well, that's reassuring. I think we try and involve the patients in these sort of big decisions, because of course they are ultimately, you know, they are not only costly, but they're time consuming. Mm-hmm. And for some patients, we'll find them quite distressing for a whole host of reasons. So that's nice to hear that you are fully aware of your role in your whole treatment.
But again, there's no mystery in it. That's the thing. I mean, when I've got a procedure coming up, I know what's going to happen. In my case, I actually know who's going to do it, because there are people within the practice that I go to that I've become to know as not only dental professionals but as friends over the time that I've been there. But knowing where you're going to be, what you're going to have done, who's going to be there, what's going to happen afterwards, it demystifies the whole thing. I mean, everybody, when they have a fear of anything, it's the fear of the unknown. And that particularly applies to dentistry, because there's all sorts of things in your mind that I think are going to happen. If you know what's going to happen, and then guess what? What happens is what you were told is going to happen. It just builds confidence and trust.
Mm, yes.
And when you've had a number of procedures, as I have, each one becomes like, oh, you told me what's going to happen. You were right last time, and guess what? You're right this time. And it just builds and builds the relationship with your practitioners.
Yeah, I think that links back to what we were saying earlier for listeners who are dental professionals to bear in mind that, yeah, we know what this stuff is. We know what's happening, but have we explained that? Have you said, right, this is going to happen, that's going to happen, that's going to happen? Because if you're running late, you're busy, whatever, mm-hmm. you can miss those things and you can just be trying to crack on. And I think what you said before about it being a two-way thing, the benefit for the patient as well as the benefit for the clinician, for sure, we all know if you're treating a patient that's relaxed and knows what's happening, it's going to be much easier than treating somebody who's clearly a bit distressed, probably because they haven't been fully informed what's going on and they're a bit worried about that. So I think that's definitely something to remember for sure. So along that kind of trail of thought, I think it's, again, difficult for professionals who haven't had the treatment. I might be doing an implant, for example. I've never had an implant. I tell people what to expect based on what somebody's told me that I should tell people, you know what I mean? So, and this is a broad question because there's lots of different things that you've had done. But what kind of things have stuck with your top tips or advice would you give to somebody who's having any of the treatment that you've had that stuck with you in terms of things that are beneficial that is really handy to know or that you were told, or things afterwards that you thought, oh, I would have liked to have known that maybe you weren't necessarily told? Is there anything that stands out from your experience?
I think the one thing that I've personally learned is it's very, very useful to have someone with you post the surgery.
Okay.
I've often felt, again, this is perhaps a personal thing, but when you come out the chair, when you've had something done, the first thing is a fantastic feeling of relief.
Yeah.
The second thing, though, is often the fact that if you've had any form of sedation or injection, you're a little bit disorientated, I've found. I sometimes feel that I'm a little bit fuzzy. And if you haven't got anybody with you and you've got to try and get home by public transport, obviously you're always told never to drive, I appreciate that. But having someone with you just to keep an eye on you is probably one piece of advice I would give to other people. But 2 or 3 days later, as you say, there's often the fact that, oh, this is a bit uncomfortable or swollen. of course it is. What you've had done is quite an invasive thing. It's going to be. And the one thing I would say is just try and be sensible in the sort of 2 to 3 days after. Obviously, how you eat, how you chew. Don't put yourself under any sort of like too much physical stress. Your body needs time to recover. I think it's that element of recovery is the one thing, Josh, I would say that I probably still to a degree underestimate. I still try and do my normal life the next day. It's probably not a bad idea to take it easy for a couple of days after some of the more invasive things. That's one thing I would say from my personal experience. In terms of beforehand, I would just say just make sure that you've got all the information you feel that you need to be comfortable. That's the thing is, if you're going in to have something done and you don't really understand what's going to happen to you, how it's going to be done, just ask, because it's just demystifying the whole thing. The more you know as a patient about what's coming up, the better it will be for everybody.
Yeah. And do you find it's beneficial having that written down? Because I'm quite conscious that, especially big things, you're talking to, these are the risks and benefits. This is what's going to happen. This is what's going to happen before. This is what's going to happen after. You have this long conversation. And I don't know, from a patient's perspective, is that information overload? Do you feel like you retain all of that? Or is having some kind of written thing beneficial, do you find?
I think it is. The problem with anything written these days is that if whatever you have done, if you go and get, I don't know, get your eyes tested or, you know, anything sort of quite written, there's always a form that you have to take or read that's often not that relevant.
Yeah.
It's just like a some kind of protection for the person doing the treatment, whatever it might be. And I think we're in a state of the world these days where you almost you don't look at the paper, you just think it's a standard form. In dentistry, the complete opposite is true. If anyone gives you a piece of paper, read it, because there's a reason you've been given it, and it's really important. How you, as professionals, convey that to the patient, I'm not sure. As a patient who's been through it, speaking to other patients, if someone gives you something, read it. There's a reason you've been giving it, because there's a lot of good information there. And as you say, Josh, it's all the stuff I've seen has been very, very well laid out. It's been clear, and it's taken a lot of the mystery out of the whole thing. That's the thing for me. If you've got any kind of uncertainty, it will make you nervous and it will make the whole thing more traumatic. And as a coward, I don't like that.
Fair enough.
I mean, you've described yourself as a coward. I think it sounds like you're an experienced dental patient who's now had a bit of a revival with your dental stuff. So would you change anything in your dental life if you had your time all over again?
I think the one thing I would do, given my time over again, is I wish I'd been in my current practice when I was about 7, as opposed to being 55. And I think that's the thing, is the fact that you don't appreciate the quality of dentistry that is available and the level of skill and professionalism and knowledge that's available. In my world, again, the world's changed a lot since I was a small boy, but the perception of dentistry today, I think, is the fact that there's a lot more that you guys can do. And now that people know that, I think a lot more people, given the right stimulus or information, will make the best of that opportunity. I didn't have the opportunity as a small child. To me, dentistry was something where you went if you were in pain. The whole perception of a dentist then is completely different to now. So if I could have changed anything now, I wish the world was like it is today when I was a small child. That's what I would wish.
So that's where we need to focus. Seeing children, getting them in a place where they're not anxious, to then hopefully eliminate this stuff that's happening later on. But if there was somebody that's in your situation or in a similar situation that's maybe at the start of their journey, you've just mentioned that you're coming to the end of this part of your dental journey. Obviously, it's going to be forever. But somebody at that starting point, what advice would you give to them? Maybe it's that person that's realizing, I think I do need to some stuff to get myself in a bit of a better state. What advice would you give to them?
I think the key thing when you're starting your journey is to find a dental practice at which you are both comfortable and have belief in the professionalism of the practice. Yeah. As I say, the relationship with your dentist is really, really key, in the respect that, you know, you're having something quite personal done to you. You've got to trust what they're doing, because they're actually doing something to your body. It is that personal. But it also has an effect. Obviously, if it's not done right, or, you know, you're not getting good advice and you're not having the right things done, you can end up having additional stuff done that you perhaps didn't need to do if you'd gone in the right direction in the first place. As I say, it's finding the right knowledge being delivered by a person that you have complete confidence in. And that would say the delivery being in someone that you're, whose manner is not only professional but personable, that it makes the patient feel comfortable. Because the relationship needs to be a two-way comfortable relationship.
And I think we always, and as dental professionals, we think we know what our patients like and what they don't like. I mean, I'd like to think that after a bit of established practice and a bit of time in the career, that you do have a concept of what makes your patients happy and what makes them unhappy. But is there anything that you can sort of share with us that think, oh, well, that really makes me particularly happy, or, God, that's actually one of my pet peeves?
I think it's always nice to be recognised when you walk into the practice. I mean, obviously, you're not there every day of the week all year, but the fact that you're recognised by when you walk in is nice. I mean, that you like that in any type of personal service, I guess. The fact that everyone knows what your situation is. I mean, I'm very lucky where in the practice that I currently go to, I see a number of people within the practice, but they all talk to each other about me, which makes me feel great. But more importantly, it shows that there's a joined up approach going on to my dentistry. And it's nice because you often get one dentist will say, I was speaking to so-and-so about this, and we know that that's coming up next week, so I want to make sure that this is all covered. And it's the comfort that it's not just one person that's dealing with one issue. You've got a whole group of people that are giving you a joined up dental package that is looking at your overall dental health.
But I think that's a really interesting point that you make. We are service providers, aren't we? So when you walk in and your first greeting is somebody making eye contact with you and saying, hello, David, that's actually just as important as, you know, everything else that you're experiencing in the dental practice. So
very much so. And the whole ambience is probably not the right word, but if you walk into any building, particularly when you're having something personal done, you know, you've got to bring what's about to happen can be quite invasive, it can be quite personal. If you can walk into that building and feel comfortable about where you are, it helps a lot. There's nothing worse, even if you know that what's going to happen to you isn't unpleasant, if you're in an environment that's not making you feel good or making you feel, for whatever reason, uncomfortable, that's not helping. So as you say, someone is saying, hey David, how are you doing? Little things like that just help bring the comfort level up as you know before you even start having anything sort of done in the surgery itself.
And of course we think that they're quite little, but actually they are really quite big, aren't they?
Absolutely. I mean, the one nice thing is I think I can probably, it's a two-way thing. I think I know the names of all the receptionists of the dentists I've ever been to. But for the reason of the fact, as a nervous patient, that's what I'll do. I'll talk to the only person I can to try and relieve my stress, you know, to try and calm things down. But that works two ways. You then build up a rapport, not with the people doing the work, but the people that are in the environment, and it makes the environment better. So as you say, it's not just those doing the doing, it's those around doing everything else. It all counts. It all matters.
So you've talked about the dental team as part of your treatment. And obviously there's varying members of the team. There's hygienists, nurses, like receptionists, all these different people that are involved. And often the general public don't necessarily have an appreciation of that team. And often it's the dentist, and that's where a lot of the conversation happens. And I know you said that you haven't really had a huge amount of history dentally. So I just wanted to explore, how did you find these other members of the team? Were you aware that they even existed in terms of the hygienists and things? And did you have any preconceptions about them being involved in your treatment? And what was your experience of that wider team in your treatment?
That's a good question, because obviously when you're obviously having some of these procedures done in the room at any one time, as a non-dentist, you expect one person to be there doing the work. But obviously often there's two or even three people in the room at the same time. And I didn't initially understand what everybody was doing. I mean, there were just people in the room. I was probably more focusing on what was going on in my mouth rather than who was in the room. However, in latter dentistry that I've had done in my current practice, it's been quite interesting to see the dynamic between the team in the room. It's been a team effort. It's been an eye-opener for me, because I can see the roles of the people in the room. I couldn't tell you what they're called, yeah. and I don't know what their titles is, but I can see the team working together. And it's been really, that's part of the treatment I now have that makes it a much different experience. You can tell the competency of the people in the room. You can see that everyone's actually putting something into the whole equation. Everyone's doing something. They're there for a reason. And I'm quite lucky, but the people I've had working with me recently or working on me recently, they even talk to me. I mean, it's not just the person doing the surgery that's talking. The whole group of people in the room are talking, and you just feel much more comfortable, and you appreciate the fact that it's not a one-on-one thing. It may be a two or three-on-one thing, but you know what? It's great that there are those other people there because they're all providing part of the service that's happening that day to you. Mm-hmm. And as I say, the fact that some of those people take the time to make sure that they're engaging with you means a lot. The level of fear just keeps going down and down and down. It's just a comfort thing. It's lovely. Never thought I'd say that about dentistry, but it is. But it's a scenario in which where you, if it was not done right, you could be very uncomfortable. But because it's done right and the whole dynamic of the room is a good dynamic, it really helps the patient.
The other thing that stood out to me there was when you were saying about working with different clinicians and everyone being aware of what's going on. I think we can all be guilty of maybe not spending that few minutes really getting up to date with what's happening, where you see that patient and you're like, oh, you know, I know that this is happening. I know that's happened. I've read that letter. There's nothing worse than coming in, sitting down and someone going, oh, I don't really know why you're here, or I don't really know what the plan is, or what's happened recently, or whatever. And that obviously doesn't put any faith in the person that you're seeing. So I think, yeah, just taking that few minutes just to do that background reading, when the patient comes in, go, oh, I know that this is happening, I know that's happening, I know that this happened last time, I know mm-hmm. that there was this problem, or whatever. I think that's good advice as well for people listening, just to, again, build that rapport, build that trust.
It makes you feel valued as a patient, that it seems people care because people are taking an interest in you, not because they directly have to, but because they know that what they're doing perhaps next month is maybe affected by what's going on today. Mm. It's just great from a patient's point of view to have that feeling, the fact that I'm being looked out for, not by the person I'm seeing today, but by the whole team. It's nice. Mm.
So if you had one message that you could put on a billboard poster in Piccadilly Circus in central London for all dental professionals to see in sort of bright lights, you got a particular message you would give to all of them?
In my case, it would be thank you from where I am today, from where I was, because I don't think I would be here in my current situation without the help of a lot of really good dental professionals. So I'd say thank you. I'd also say to a message for patients would be, don't be scared. If you feel that there's an issue that needs to be resolved or you've got a problem, even if you don't do anything, speak to someone about it. Talk to a dental professional. Get an understanding of what the situation actually is, and then they can decide if they want to take on their fear or not and whether they feel they need to. But I think it's don't be frightened of dentists. Dentists are the good guys, right? I mean, they're there to help. They only do what they believe is the right thing to do. And if you are a patient, as I was, and I can say this with complete and utter certainty, and I can say I was a terrible patient, a very, very frightened patient. If you're in that situation, speak to people. Speak to dentists, speak to other patients, because it can actually be the right thing to do nothing, but very rarely is it really the right thing to do.
David, do you have a single piece of dental advice that's been given to you that's stuck with you? And can you tell us what it might be and who gave it to you?
I've had some very good advice about how to keep my teeth clean that I'd not previously had from my current hygienist. Some advice to buy a good electric toothbrush, to basically use those very small. I've got a number of teeth where I get food trapped between the teeth, and you're going to have to help me with the name of this, but those very small brushes that go between teeth.
Mm-hmm. There are lots of different makes out there. We couldn't begin to start mentioning one particular company, but yes, those little brushes for in-between spaces.
And that's something that I didn't even know existed, and they've been invaluable to me in keeping my teeth clean and making my mouth feel nice and healthy, which is good. So that was some good advice. But the whole advice around oral hygiene has been probably the best advice I've had. I think most people clean their teeth, but don't really think about exactly what they're doing. And I think I now clean my teeth for the first time properly in my entire life.
So we've talked about all the different parts of your dental journey up until this point, but a couple of things. The first part is, what's the future for your dental care? And I guess part of that is all of this stuff needs maintenance. Nothing lasts forever. So what's your thoughts for the future of your dental care? And do you have any thoughts on the maintenance of the care that you've had up until this point?
In the last sort of 2 to 3 years, it's been quite a proactive set of activities that I've had done. Mm-hmm. So based on the fact that the priority was to get those things done, you might think that there's been no maintenance going on as well at the same time. But obviously throughout that whole cycle of activity, there's been an ongoing maintenance program. In my case, I get a regular cleaning. I get staining in my bottom lower front teeth quite quickly in about the space of probably 3 to 4 months. So I always go to see my hygienist on a sort of regular, very regular basis. Obviously at that time, everything else is checked out as well. So I'm always looking out for any upcoming challenges that may be there. Mm-hmm. So there's definitely a very proactive approach to my dentistry now. In terms of anything big, as I say, I'm having my latest implant next week. And beyond that, as far as I'm aware, unless my dentist tells me otherwise, at the moment, there's nothing major that is even on the horizon that we're aware of. Mm-hmm. But obviously the maintenance in my case involves the fact that actually we may need to bring in the next phase of a plan because something needs doing. I've got a lot of old fillings that I know at some stage may or may not need replacing. So there's a lot of things that could happen in the near future for me in terms of requiring more dental work. I will basically take the guidance from my dental team on what needs to be done and when. And that purely comes from regular visits. And then we can decide not only an ongoing maintenance plan, but in theory, if required, a next phase of the activity plan.
Yeah, and I think every dental professional will, that's what we aim for, stabilize and maintain. So if we can get to a point where everything's nice and stable, maintain that and treat anything that comes up as and when it comes up. So that's great to hear.
Thank you so much, David, for coming in to the podcast and talking about your dental journey.
It's been a pleasure. Thanks for sharing that with us.
Thank you for having me.
If you've been inspired by that episode, did you know that the Eastman Dental Hospital Education Centre provide training for the whole dental team? Follow us on social media or search for the Eastman Dental Hospital Education Centre to find out more.
We hope you've enjoyed listening to this episode. We would love to hear your suggestions for future guests. Remember to follow us on social media using hashtag the Eastman Dental Podcast. And if you like what you hear, please like, share, subscribe and listen out for future episodes.